Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
It's going to be fun today, Fred. If you talk to trees, you might be a nut, right? But it turns out that trees talk to one another. That's the topic of today's program.
It is. And you know, my daughter was going through Boulder the other day, and she actually saw a guy hugging a tree.
I've always heard that all the best fruits and nuts come from California. But Fred, when we look at what trees do, for example, if beetles are attacking trees,
they'll reproduce the saliva of attacking beetles to attract predators to come get the beetles.
That is just stunning. Yep. Wow, the tree attracts predators to get rid of these beetles. Also, when a sapling is growing in a forest, certain species of trees, they'll pull back their roots to give space for that new tree to grow.
Yep.
That's awesome.
And another one, when one tree is diseased, other trees will give up nutrients in hopes of nursing the sick tree back to health.
Wow. So we will go through an article by Tom Hennigan, writing for Answers Magazine. He's got multiple master's degrees from Syracuse University, associate professor of biology at Truett McConnell University, and he teaches organism biology, ecology, and he specializes in forest ecology. So he's the right person to write this article on how trees communicate. But Fred, this is Real Science Radio. We always have nuggets of our own. So let's share with the audience what they could find already at rsr.org/trees.
For example, Bob, how do plants know which way is up or down?
What a great point.
You know, because roots, it has roots, right? How does it know to send them
down?
And then
the stem, you plant a seed in the ground. What if it sent the roots up and the stem down? It would die.
Yep.
The whole species would die, right? So it turns out that they make inside plant cells, which are tiny, they make these little statoliths. They're like anchors. And because of gravity, the anchor in the cell falls to the bottom of the cell and therefore roots down toward the anchor, toward the statolith, and stem up away from the anchor.
And what about trees evolving? We've got a great article at rsr.org/trees.
Yep.
And everything you wanted to know about the evidence against tree evolution.
Yes, because of course the evolutionists, they assume that, well, like everything else, trees evolve. Fred, we also address trees at our classic Evolution's Big Squeeze list, where everything is happening earlier and earlier because their model is false.
Yep.
When they first came up with, okay, here's when things evolved, that timeline is being squeezed beyond recognition. So rsr.org/squeeze, you find out at first they said 350 million years ago, then 370 million years ago, now 390 million years ago. And if you look at that list, you'll see that they're running out of room for evolution to happen because everything happened way earlier than they ever imagined. It's squeezing the theory out of plausibility.
And also at rsr.org/trees, you can find out about tree rings.
Oh, yeah.
Dendrochronology and a young Earth.
Yes, because the evolutionists say they know the Earth is billions of years old. The Bible is wrong because the earth is older than Genesis indicates that it is. And they point to tree rings as one example. And especially they use the bristlecone pine. And that species, they grow in California, White Mountains of California. They have so many rings. And then they take trunks that are fallen on the floor of the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
These trees grow on mountains. Driest place on earth, practically.
Yep.
And they compare them to rings of trees still growing. And when they can find an overlap of tree ring thickness, it's a pretty neat discipline doing that.
Yeah.
They say, look, we could prove that the earth just from these trees is older than you creationists think it is. Well, turns out that it has been demonstrated conclusively that these trees grow multiple rings per year. It's something that dendrochronology utterly ignores.
Yeah. Instead of one tree ring per year, multiple rings.
Yes.
So they make the assumption, just like all their dating methods, they make assumptions that aren't true often or not true.
Yeah. Turns out the tree rings, the dark rings, it's the same plant cells, only they get narrower. And it's a water retention system. So when there's drought-like conditions, the tree is constantly trying to preserve water, and it's making more and more rings than it normally would if there was plentiful water.
Yeah, and if there's something like rapid radioactive decay, couldn't that throw off their radiometric dating?
Oh, exactly.
That's another big assumption they make. And we have really good evidence that happened.
Yes, at rsr.org/radioactivity. So those are the kinds of nuggets that you can find already at rsr.org/trees. And we'll have to add a link to today's show to that landing page, because this is so fun. When we think of a forest as a place we enjoy going, it's so mentally refreshing, it's healthy. But it turns out it's a place where trees work together, but not only in a forest, also in your neighborhood, at the park, on your church grounds. Trees, it turns out, are communicating to try to stay healthy.
Yeah, so stress is constantly threatened to destroy a forest. And yet trees are equipped with the ability to respond to these stresses.
Yeah, so Tom Hennigan, writing for Answers in Genesis, he points out that the research that's ongoing in this field is stunning. It's shocking everyone, even researchers.
Yep.
And even, he
They're
says,
totally
even
amazed.
If you're an atheist, right? It shocks everyone what's going on, that trees form communities that talk to each other, they share their needs, and they provide mutual assistance. So when this guy, Tom Hennigan, who spent much of his life studying forest ecology, when he says it's mind-boggling for him, and he spent his whole life studying this, be prepared, fasten your seatbelts.
Yeah, so trees don't just communicate with each other. They communicate with other creatures seeking help. We mentioned one of those bullet points at the beginning.
Yes, that's right. So one of their defenses against being overeaten is producing chemicals that make them taste bad.
Wow.
Right? A lot of creatures eat plants. Plants are toward the bottom of the food chain, right? And so all the creatures that eat leaves, thankfully, in the ecosystem of the world, Fred, there's very minimal metabolism of cellulose, because otherwise you'd have runaway microbes and destroying all the forest of the world. So thankfully that doesn't happen. But trees are able to make their leaves taste bad. And when they're doing that, at the same time, they release other chemicals to warn nearby trees that a swarm of beetles or other, say, animals have invaded. And these chemicals are specifically tailored for that purpose.
So you said they're tailored for that purpose. So how did that evolve?
How did that evolve?
Can you imagine how that happened?
Yeah.
So, you know, evolution is random mutation and natural selection.
Right. So you have trees, and I guess they had it evolve before all the threats against them would destroy them.
Yeah.
So they can't even survive to the next generation. Okay, so let's say you've got trees, right? And trees are being threatened by insects, microbes, whatever, giraffes. So first of all, if they're going to end up evolving defense mechanisms, first, somehow they have to become aware of the problem, and they don't have a brain,
yep.
right? They don't have a soul, a spirit. Plants only have a body. Animals have a body and some semblance of a soul. Human beings have body, soul, and spirit. So first of all, if it's going to evolve these defense mechanisms, they have to be aware, okay, there's a problem. Next, they have to attempt some kind of a defense. And you're a tree, you know? You're a tree, and you're being attacked. You seem to have minimal options. Okay, first, I have to know I'm being attacked. And then secondly, And now I have to defend myself. But of course, I have no brain. I can't think about any of this.
And then third, you have to have some kind of random change to produce the right kind of chemical.
Yeah, so, right. So are they going to have a molecular response? Are they going to put some kind of a bubble over the tree? What are they going to do? So they choose a molecular response. But Fred, when you said they have to choose some kind of chemical combination, there's trillions of those.
Yeah.
There's trillions, quadrillions, quintillions of possible molecular combinations. So the tree, what does it
do?
Probably, it starts
yeah.
going through them?
I'm trying to imagine you'd have to have billions upon billions of trees on top of each other and to find the right one that had the right combination. This is it can't happen.
Right. And so then you have your very first tree that somehow goes through all that, and insects are devouring its leaves. It's going to die. And it figures all this out, and then it has to pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah.
So not only figure it out, do it, but it has to be encoded then into the germination of the next generation. How that evolve turns out to be another extinction-level event that we often highlight, that trees could not possibly do this in any kind of a non-directed way.
So going back to Tom's article, Bob, they don't have just chemical warnings.
Yeah.
Some oak and beech leaves and spruce needles will produce, guess what, electrical signals.
Hey, how's that?
So that they produce those when an insect predator eats them.
I would too. If I were being eaten by a beetle, I think.
Yeah. So electrical impulses generate messages to the rest of the tree. Says, hey, watch out. You know, this all happens within an hour. And the tree will hopefully taste so bad that the insects will flee.
Wow. And this doesn't always work because of the fall. When God created a perfect paradise, the ecosystem, the symbiosis, everything was perfect. But because of sin, disease, decay, death came into the world, genetic breakdown, genetic entropy. And now things don't work the way they were created to work. But we could see the evidence of God's perfect design in a fallen world. It turns out,
and we could learn from this, Bob, you know, hey, if you got a teenager that's overeating, feed him something that doesn't taste good.
Like what, Fred? What would you feed to your kids?
Well,
you're such a mean dad.
For me, tuna fish casserole would do the trick, man. That would definitely deter me from eating.
Our kids hated the whey protein.
Oh, the whey. Yeah. Okay.
And put a little milk of magnesia in with it, and they'll
powdered milk?
They'll really lose weight. So, turns out, it's not only insects eating trees that generate defense mechanisms. If you're on the African savanna and you see a giraffe, right? It's just one of the most beautiful sights in the world, the way God made these creatures.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so absurd how the evolutionists say, well, the giraffe evolved a long neck because they had eaten all the leaves at the bottom of the trees and they had to eat the leaves at the top of the trees. Well, this article points out if the giraffes were able to eat all the leaves on the trees would all die. And next year there'd be nothing to eat. And that'd be the end of the trees and the giraffes. But you and I have made fun of the idea of the giraffe's neck getting taller because he had to stretch his neck.
Yeah.
As though there's no such thing as genetic science. If you play basketball and stretch a lot, that doesn't mean your kids will be born taller.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, Darwin believed that. It's called Lamarckism, and it's been long disproven.
Yeah, inherited traits, and it has been superseded by genetic science, Mendelism. And in fact, the evolutionists hated the Mendelians.
They did.
For decades, the journal Nature refused to print articles on genetic science because it really does contradict wild hopes of the evolutionists.
They still refuse to print articles on science, but that's another story.
Yes. And by the way, about Mendel and all, you could see that history at rsr.org/fathers, the fathers of the physical sciences. Okay, so Fred, the giraffes, when a giraffe in Africa starts eating acacia leaves, soon enough, the plants will become inedible to the giraffe, so that otherwise, the next season, there'd be no trees left for the giraffes to eat and survive
on. It's amazing. The leaves will send out the warning gas. It's a warning gas.
Yeah.
ethylene, and other trees in the vicinity detect the scent of this gas, and they start producing their own defense chemicals before these giraffes arrive at their tree.
That is just stunning. So it avoids overeating, and that brings us back to the insects that we mentioned at the top of the show, where the tree chemically analyzes the insect's saliva. Now, the tree doesn't know it's doing this, right? God mm-hmm. designed not only in the DNA, the genome of the plant, but there's so much information inside a living cell, far beyond just what's in its DNA. And so God designed in the plant the ability to instinctively, automatically analyze saliva of insects that are munching on it. And if there's a problem developing, the tree will mass produce that chemical, and it will broadcast the chemical to the forest community. I love this article by Tom Hennigan for Answers in Genesis. It is so great, Fred, because then it becomes a cry for help, and it alerts predators, so the trees mass produce this saliva.
Yeah, and these predators, they make haste, and they're there.
Like, say,
chomping
wasps.
Down on the beetles.
Yep. And all the creatures, there are many that eat certain kinds of insects. Now, mm-hmm. here they come, the swarms, to defend the trees. It's the yeah. idea that that could evolve. How'd that evolve? The idea that that could evolve is so absurd. It's absurd cube to the Googleplex. Yeah. That's how absurd yep. it is that it could happen by random mutation and natural selection. So here come the rescuers. They fly to the location and they eliminate the insects that are attacking the trees.
This reminds me of the president of ICR, Randy Galuza.
Oh, yeah.
His continuous environmental tracking.
Oh, that guy is brilliant.
Yeah, he
Fred.
Really is.
And he points out it's not just an immune system. Mm-hmm. The immune system is like the tip of the iceberg. Yep. What's going on at the molecular level in an organism, especially in a human body, but in all organisms, it's stunning. The millions in a human body, the millions of observations and responses happening every second to the microbes in mm-hmm. our environment, it's all stunning. And so trees are part of that grand design that God came up with so that life could survive on Earth, and not only on a perfect Earth, but with contingencies than even on a fallen Earth.
Yeah, so Bob, you gave a eulogy here recently over Memorial Weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was so
week.
Cool. Yeah, you were telling me about how you were able to use this apologetics
yes.
information during your sermon.
As we're preparing for this show, Fred, Fort Logan National Cemetery, one of our military cemeteries, what a benefit of serving in the military and then being buried or having
place.
Your ashes interred mm-hmm. at all over the country. There's so many. And Fort Logan here in Denver is just beautiful. I mean, it's a sad place, but you go mm-hmm. and honor those who have fallen, those who have died, their spouses. And so I made the point because here's the family gathered. The matriarch of the family mm-hmm. is now gone to be with the Lord. And as with all families, you know, there are people who believe in God. There are people who yep. don't. And I happen to know that there was at least one guy I've known for a couple decades through the show who's an agnostic. And so there's 1,000 trees, without exaggerating, in Fort Logan. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, everything, really everything, tells us that there is a creator God. But I said, look at the trees around us. It's so easy to take them for granted. And then I give the examples that we're talking about on this show. And it's part of the memorial service, part of the message to say that there is a God, and it's not just special, narrow arguments that tell us mm-hmm. there's a God. When you open your eyes, everything shouts of the glory of God, everything.
Yeah, and yeah, what a great way to, you know, to witness to those people. Like you said, there's going to be some people in the crowd, you know, that yeah. aren't believers.
Yeah, and in fact, this one gentleman came up immediately afterward, Fred, and just thanked me and said, Bob, it was so appropriate. Thank you so very much. And that was from an agnostic. Mm-hmm. And Fred, in our normal lives, when we're talking with unbelievers, literally everything is evidence for God. And one example is the tree that's growing outside your window.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and Origins is a great way to reach, you know, like Answers in Genesis really pushes the theme that our society is like the Greeks, where the cross is foolishness. We should always preach the cross, but you can reach a lot of these people with Origins, and I think it's so great that you did that in your eulogy.
Thank you.
You know, my kids going to CSU, they were, even though we warned them, they were really surprised about how many people just have no clue about creation. And, you know, shocked to hear that, hey, there's something against evolution.
Yeah.
And it actually opens the door. So you, you open the door for who
so
knows
great,
how many
Fred.
People
and
there.
And then we heard indirectly, somebody asked for the notes for the message. And I got to email the notes to people who I don't know. And in there, in the PDF that I saved for them, is a link to this article at Answers in Genesis website.
Yeah, perfect.
So hopefully they'll not only read the notes, but then they'll click and read Tom Hennigan's entire article, which is so faith-affirming. So to continue with Tom's article, he points out that trees that produce flowers and fruit, they purposefully, by their design, they send out the sweet-scented messages in such a variety of colors, patterns, perfumes, to invite animals to come and explore, you know, partake of what's being offered here to the forest. And of course, that keeps the pollination system healthy and functioning. And by the way, trees, some trees have genders. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah. So there are male and female trees.
Yeah. Not all, but some species have male
such
and female.
As the cedar, you know, the mulberry, ash trees.
I love cedar trees.
And they're distinguished as male or female by their flowers.
That is just so awesome. So trees are attracting other organisms to come to them, but then that does produce problems. And so we've been talking about when trees communicate wirelessly, right? We have wired. You're in the computer industry. Mm-hmm. I started in the computer industry. You had wired Ethernet. The very first time two computers were connected to share data, that was a dramatic moment in the history of the world.
And wasn't Al Gore involved in that?
Yeah, Al Gore invented the Internet. That's right.
He hooked up two computers.
Yes.
Wrong.
But that was the early phase of wired communication. Then it became wireless and Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And so we've been talking about trees sending basically like aerosol messages, Wi-Fi, wireless.
Yeah, exactly. Either electrical or through gas or chemicals.
But it turns out that they also send wired communications through their root systems, and roots spread out pretty far.
Yeah, they can, and they can go pretty deep too. They can go, you know, often just a few feet, but they can go up as much as 400 feet. You know, such as the shepherd's tree in the Kalahari Desert in southern Africa.
Yeah, that's right. And when you look at a tree and you see its canopy, the branches and the leaves, picture double that for the footprint of the roots in the soil and down below.
And so these roots will connect directly with the roots of other trees. And what's amazing is the trees can actually distinguish members of their own kind and establish connections with them.
Wow.
The wired connection.
And the Bible says that God made each organism after its own kind.
Yep.
Right? If evolution were true, why are there these incredible boundaries between kinds? What we should have is an almost impossible ability to identify kinds because what the evolutionists, now they look for the missing link, the intermediary species. Well, it should all be just a mess.
It should be really
a mushmash of blur.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But it's not. God created them after their kind. And so tree roots, when they connect, they know, okay, this is another of my own kind. And when one tree is sick.
Yeah. Well, when a tree is sick, nearby trees, they'll share their nutrients.
That is.
Yeah. So somehow there's signal information going on between the trees.
Yes.
Hey, I need more nutrients.
Absolutely stunning. And then the trees will offer. And that contradicts the Darwinian nature, red in tooth and claw. You know, there is that. That's true. We live in a fallen world.
Yep.
But not everything is a life and death struggle where everything is trying to get its own DNA to reproduce. There is altruism among human beings, most extraordinarily, but also imagine trees sacrificing so that a sick tree could get better or a sapling could grow.
Incredible. Bob, just to elaborate on what we were just talking about, what about the lodgepole pine sapling that springs up in the shade of a thick forest?
Yeah, right. So it needs to grow. Well, it turns out that older trees somehow sense that this sapling, this baby tree here, it needs to get enough sunlight to make food for itself, photosynthesis, which is one of God's brilliant ideas, brought to you by God, maker of heaven and earth and other fine products. It not only needs sunlight, it also needs space for its roots. And so trees will even change their root structure to open up space for this,
for this young
new
tree.
Neighbor.
Yep. Yeah. So how do trees, or how do these plants communicate in the soil?
Yes.
So they have several options, and one possibility is sound. For example, researchers have found evidence that seedlings emit vibrations detected and measured at 220 hertz.
220 hertz. Fred, this isn't the first time I've read research. The first time was like 20 years ago. About the sounds going on in tree roots as they're growing and in trees generally. And it really is shocking even to think about it. But let's hear for the audience. Our producer has 220 hertz just so we could hear what the other tree roots are hearing. Okay, so there's the tone.
Oh, okay.
It's not continuous like that,
yeah,
as far as I know. But so the seedling is putting out a 220 hertz vibration that's being detected, and it turns out that this affects the growth and the direction of other roots when they hear this frequency.
Yep.
So this research is continuing. Perhaps it's going to pan out. But right now, just in this aspect of how trees communicate, it looks like that's happening.
Yeah. And so like with the wireless using chemicals, the wired system also use chemicals. They'll communicate with chemical messages, but they aren't just talking to each other.
Right.
They're
exactly.
actually talking to other organisms in the soil.
Yeah. Microorganisms, bacteria and fungi. And Fred, this is described as the underground internet.
Yeah, the Wood Wide Web. And that's not, I'm not joking. That's what they call it.
The Wood Wide Web. And chemical signals will be produced by the tree and then sent along through the fungi. The fungi is making its own network, its own wired network. And those signals, they travel quickly and they get to other trees. Sometimes the fungi needs to get into the roots. That's a common thing. And imagine this. The fungus needs to get into the roots, but roots have a tough exterior.
Yeah, they soften a place in the root where they can enter.
Where they can enter the tree.
How did the tree know to let itself soften when the fungi
soften right there at that
amazing.
Point? And the tree will produce sugars to attract these microorganisms. And the microorganisms then, it's a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. They benefit the tree benefits them. The microorganism, the fungi says, hey, we need to get inside your roots. And the tree says, okay, let me open up a doorway here for you to get in.
Yeah, because I want to be a big, tall trunk.
And by the way, these microbes, they also help the trees obtain water, minerals. They protect them from drought. They absorb toxic, heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not only talking about music there, heavy metals. And they help undernourished and young trees. these trees could not survive. They couldn't build their tall trunks without the steady supply of minerals provided by these microbes. The microbes mine the soil and they transport the minerals to the tree.
And beyond that, they help lessen, like, when there's a flood, you know, because trees absorb a ton of water. Mm. And so they actually help, you know, stem the tide of when there's floodwaters.
Yeah. Just like cattle are a reservoir for human beings, for people, when there's a drought, you store up a tremendous amount of calories, nutrients in cattle, and then you survive the drought. Hmm. God thought of so much when he made the earth. And Fred, Tom Hennigan points out that within a single cubic foot of soil between two trees, there are literally miles of tiny tubes. Miles of tubes.
Wow. Yep.
And what's going on in those tubes, you can argue, is more complicated, more sophisticated than what's going on in the internet backbone.
Oh, without question.
Yeah. Memorial Day weekend, in fact, just last weekend, Fred, Cheryl, and I, we went up to Buffalo Bill's grave in Golden.
One of his many resting locations?
No, he's not in Cody, Wyoming. It was in his will that he wanted to be buried just outside of Cody, Wyoming. But then he told his wife, Louisa, I want to be buried there on Lookout Mountain. It's gorgeous.
Yep.
So she had him buried there, and she was buried there like 4 years later. And they covered their coffins with tons of cement because the people in Cody, Wyoming wanted to steal the body.
Yeah.
But he's
here. I lived in Casper for 2 months. We went to Yellowstone once. And, hey, I thought Buffalo Bill was buried in Colorado. You know, I guess he's buried in multiple locations.
Yeah, right, right. He's like the apostles. You know, you got a tooth here and a knee bone there. Yeah. And right, the relics that you could find throughout much of the Middle East and beyond.
Yeah. Right. So what's really cool about what you're talking about is, you know, forests, they're literally a healthy experience. Mm. Like, blood pressure is lower when you're in a forest.
Wow. Yeah.
There's something soothing about it.
Yes, it sure is. Because when we live in our suburban or urban environment, that's, for the most part, a man-made infrastructure around us. When you're in the forest, God made it, and there's something sublime. It's not only emotionally and intellectually soothing, even physically, your body, when you breathe in a forest, it's healthy.
Yeah. Several studies have found that access to, you know, the nature, these forests, yield better cognitive functioning. Mm. You know, unless you're wearing...
You can think better. You get clear-headed.
Yeah, unless you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, they're right.
Yeah, then you wipe out that whole advantage.
Quadrupling your carbon dioxide you're breathing in. Yeah. When you go to the forest, take off your mask. Silly, silly you. So, Fred, the forest here just above Golden, you know, you're just getting into the Rocky Mountains. Our studio, Real Science Radio, we are in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're on the Hogbacks, and then right away you get to the 14ers. Colorado has, 40 mountains of 14,000 feet in altitude. And it is one of the most wonderful experiences. And Cheryl has insisted throughout our going on 30 years of marriage with our kids that we get up in the mountains. We live here. Take advantage of what's near where you live. You live near the coast, make sure you get to the beach. Mm-hmm. You live by the mountains, you live where there's great fishing. Take advantage of what God has provided for you, and you will be blessed.
Yep. So Tom closes his article with some really good Bible verses, and one that's like the creationist, one of the creationists' favorite is Romans 1:20, which proclaims, "Since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse."
So that unbelievers are without excuse, because when you look at the trees, you know that there is a creator God. How that evolved, it can evolve. And if somebody says, well, aliens brought the trees, well, how they evolve, all they're doing is punting when they say, well, aliens did it. Well, then how did the aliens evolve? Tom Hennigan also points out, Fred, that God will renew his creation because it is groaning under the decay of the fall. And so when God creates the new heavens and the new earth, then earth will be pristine again. All that disease, all the suffering, all the death will be gone. And what a joy it will be for all those who love him and who love one another to then experience life the way God intended it to be experienced.
Yep. And I love the way he closes his article, you know, about spending more time in the forest and how wonderful that is to, you know, meditate with God and get your priorities in line. And so he quotes scripture, "Seek the Lord while he may be found, for you shall go out with joy and be led out with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth into singing before you, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands." And that's Isaiah 55, verse 6 and 12.
Yeah, what a beautiful metaphor and anthropomorphism. Just wonderful how God made the earth. And if we don't worship him, even the rocks themselves would shout for joy.
Good point.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thanks, Bob.
And for Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.